So we've been in the series Becoming Wise, the book by Krista Tippett this fall, and several of you are in study groups, some of you are reading the book. And she talks about these raw materials to becoming wise. There's five raw materials. We've talked about word, the power of the word, and the power of the flesh or the body last week, Johanna talked about. By the way, Reverend Dr. Johanna. Yeah, I wish she was in the house to celebrate that. She just got her doctorate in divinity. So the third raw material is love. Probably the first in the order of things, right? Love. Love is perhaps the most difficult task given us. The most extreme. The final proof and text for which all other work is only preparation. Rainer Rilke, the poet, the German poet, wrote that in letters to a young poet. There were all kinds of young, sensitive poets who were inspired by him and wanted some of his wisdom, and so they would write questions about life to him, and this was his response. Love is one of the most difficult tasks given us. Love is our supreme goal. Yet he's calling us into something to recognize that love is not just an easy thing. Right? A lot of times we think of love, we think of the bliss of experience of love, right? Being loved and loving someone else, loving somebody who's easy to love. But he's talking about something else. He's talking about the work of love, right? The long haul of love, not just in a personal relationship, although it can be that too, but also something bigger than that. Krista Tippett, the author of this fall series of Becoming Wise, she's also the host of the radio show on NPR called On Being. And over the years, she has interviewed all kinds of innovators from all different kinds of fields, spiritual leaders, scientists, poets, artists, you name it, basically, politicians, activists. She's sat one-on-one with a lot of them and really listened and asked important questions. And she said she's noticed that in the public discourse and in our reality, what has changed and actually is kind of an evolving part of us is that we have begun to acknowledge the hate in our society. We actually have something we call hate crimes, to acknowledge the ugliness, the worst of the human condition that shows up out of the prejudice that we have. But she said she's also noticed something really powerful, that at every turn, the word love seems to come around. The word love as a longing in our common life, that we wish to experience love in the public life, not just in the private one. That we wish to experience it with one another on a daily basis. So if we were to do that, where would it lead us? What would that look like? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. cast a vision of what it would look like at the end of the civil rights movement. He said the end is reconciliation. The end is redemption. He said the end is the beloved community. The Episcopal Church describes the beloved community. A lot of people describe the beloved community, but I like the way that they put it into a vision, that the beloved community is a global vision of humans cooperating together in sharing the earth's abundance so that all people can thrive. People of the beloved community recognize the intrinsic worth of all people, and prejudice, cruelty, and greed are replaced with the all-inclusive spirit of friendship and goodwill. I want to be a part of that community, don't you? And we are. It's here now. John Lewis talked about it in the civil rights. The beloved community is already here. He sounded like such a truth student, such a unity truth student, affirming what is, you know, experiencing what is right now. We'll hear from him a little bit later. What will it take then for us to become the beloved community? And how does this seemingly momentous shift happen? Anthony Appiah studied how incredibly cruel practices across time and humanity have ended. What caused them to end? For example, things like women binding their feet in China, or slavery as a foundation of the British Empire. What caused them to end? What happened? He says, every time it points to a change in the human heart. He said it happens slowly. It happens over time, generally. But then the movements and the leaders come along and topple the structures. So first, it's an inside job. We all know this, right? As spiritual students, as people walking this path, it's an inside job. It's the transformation of the mind. It's the transformation of the heart. It's the renew in me, a clean spirit, oh God, a new spirit, the power of the renewing mind. And that is what makes change in society. So that means that all of us here, sitting here, are really those are going to make the change. The ones that are holding the space, who are working the spirit and the heart, who are looking to renew and transform themselves with an understanding that it's not just about us and our personal relationships, but it's about a common life shift. It's about bringing love into the public arena. So when John Paul Lederach is another person who talks about this in a little bit different way. He's a global conflict resolution and transformation expert that Krista talks about in the book. And he said it doesn't just happen, change doesn't just happen by critical mass, like enough people get together and get out on the streets and demonstrate or make change in the boardrooms or the government buildings. He said, it's not really about that exactly. What he says makes change is critical yeast. Critical yeast. Stepping out of polar opposite thinking is critical yeast. Relating to others as fellow human beings with different perspectives and experiences is critical yeast. It's about stepping out of fear and into care. It's about really living into the question that the poet Elizabeth Alexander asks, are we not of interest to each other? Are we not of interest to each other? Because when we become of interest to each other, bridges are built, hearts are opened, change happens. Shift happens, as we like to say. Change happens here. Change happens in spiritual community. And change happens, of course, here, and in the body. And the world needs that collective change of heart and mind. And as it shifts, we shift into greater love, experience of love. So let's connect the dots for a moment here to how this works for us individually and then how it connects to what's going on in our world and in our cities and in our neighborhoods. We may think of ourselves as helpless observers in these situations. We might be observing the terrible things that go on in the world, reading about them, watching about them, and just thinking, what can I do? I just feel like a helpless observer. It's just depressing to watch. Anybody ever feel this way? Yeah, a lot of us do. Yet, we might not be in the trenches. We might not be soldiers or social reformers. Some of us are here, maybe. But we may not be in those roles right now. We may not be the activists or the reporters on the front lines. But here's the thing. We have a crucial role to play that people in the trenches can't really play at the same time. I think about the listening circles, the way they're set up a lot of times when we have a lot of people. There's a big circle around an inner circle. And in the inner circle, there's always an open seat, and you can come into the inner circle and participate in that conversation, but the outer circle is holding space. The outer circle is bearing witness. The outer circle is listening from the heart. And that's our job. We are the ones who do exactly this. We bear witness. We hold space. We pray. We behold the divine in all. We love without exception, loving everyone. Sounds a lot like God, doesn't it? Like what we'd imagine the divine allness to do? Bears witness, holds space, prays, beholds the divine in all, loves without exception, loves everyone. That's what we're called to do, the I am, right? That's what we're called to be. That's what we mean when we say embodying the sense of the divine, being the hands and feet of God. It's doing the very things that that spirit would do. And so it's absolutely crucial that somebody is playing that role, that the big wide circle of any event that is going on, if we aren't in the center of that circle, if we aren't in the center of the war, the crime, the difficulty, the horrendous things that happen, if we're not in the center, thank God we're not in the center, right? I have a role to play, though. Not to just watch the news, no. An active role to play, to bear witness, to love, to see the divine in everyone without exception. That's the high call right there. That's the difficulty of love, the great task, the supreme goal that Rainer Rilke was talking about. Spiritual practices fortify us in divine love. That's why it's so important to keep them going. You know, there's times when they can feel kind of arid. We maybe don't feel the connection to them. Maybe it's time to evolve our spiritual practice into something else, to try something else, or maybe that's exactly the time to go deeper into that spiritual practice and re-up our commitment. But whatever it is that we do, it's a resiliency building. It's a fortification. It's very much like our meditation today. It's tapping that love that is deep inside the heart of our heart and feeling it and releasing it and allowing it to fill us up so it's easy to give it out. Otherwise, we're just tired and depressed all the time or angry or in fear, right? If we just let the winds of the world bat us around and we have no inner life, no fulcrum, no sense of balance inside of us, well, then that's exactly what we'll experience, just getting battered around by the winds of life in this human condition. But that's not why we came here. There's a higher love. There's a higher love we're looking for, that we're seeking, that we know is there. That's what Steve Winwood talked about. Bring me the higher love, he said. Think about it. There must be a higher love. Remember this song? Without it. Whew. Don't even want to imagine that. He just sings over and over, bring me the higher love. Where's that higher love I keep thinking of? And then he answers his own question. I'll look inside my heart. You look inside yours. Looking inside our hearts is actually what we do when we become wholehearted lovers of spirit. Wholehearted, then, lovers of humanity. Wholehearted lovers of our animal and plant friends and all life upon the planet and beyond. Whole lovers of spirit. Holy Spirit, that's the whole love of spirit, the Holy Spirit. And we become in that love. We live and move and have our being in that whole spirit of love. When we activate and awaken love within us, we become wholehearted people. Brené Brown, the social researcher, talks a lot about wholeheartedness. She's done a lot of work around a lot of things, vulnerability and shame and different aspects of qualities of human beings and what we can do to better ourselves. And wholeheartedness is a big piece of that. Let's listen for a moment to an interview that she had on wholeheartedness.
What is, what's wholeheartedness versus like half-heartedness? And how do you cultivate wholeheartedness, whatever that is?
I love that you ask. I love your question. What is wholeheartedness, and is the opposite of that half-heartedness? I never thought about what the opposite of wholeheartedness was when I came up with that concept for my work. I was just looking at the men and women who, despite the scarcity in our culture, despite the perfectionism, despite the pressure to hustle, These were men and women who woke up every day and said, you know what? I'm scared. I'm imperfect. I'm vulnerable. But that doesn't change the fact that I am worthy of love and belonging, and I'm brave. And so I said, that sounds like wholeheartedness to me. And you know, honestly, that phrase comes from the Book of Common Prayer in the Episcopal Church. During one of our prayers, we say, we have not loved you with our whole hearts. And I came to that phrase because I thought these were men and women living and loving with their whole hearts. And so that phrase came up for me, I think maybe 2009, 2010. And as I've kept writing about wholeheartedness, I do think the opposite of it is half-heartedness, where it's a half-hearted effort, meaning I didn't put my whole self into it because I tried to hedge my bet so that if it didn't work out, I wouldn't be as hurt. And the only thing worse than failure, a wholehearted failure, is a half-hearted failure. Because at least with a wholehearted failure, I can say, damn, I was all in and I gave it everything and this hurt so much, but I was all in and I'm proud of that. But when I have failed in the past, and I've had some big failures, professional and personal, and they were half-hearted, and I had to look back and say, God, I failed. That really hurts. And it even hurts more because I know I didn't put everything into it. I didn't take the risk. So I do think the choices are wholehearted. Put yourself out there. Show up. Love big. Or it's half-hearted. And I think we think that by protecting that half of our heart, you know, we'll get less hurt, but I don't think that's true.
Amen, huh? You and I did not come here to be half-hearted. We signed up for a wholehearted journey, and that's the call. That's what's needed in our world. That's a world starving for love is asking for the people who remember that they signed up to be wholehearted people, step up, step in, take the difficult path of love. Love at that higher level that Steve Winwood was longing for, bringing in, calling in. You know, have you noticed that it's not so easy to hit the snooze button anymore? Used to be we could hit the snooze button and we could kind of get away with it, just sort of sliding by for a while. But life just keeps bringing us stuff, right? On a collective level that it's like, oh, at every turn, right? There's a pandemic, there's a mass shooting, oh, there's another mass shooting, oh, there's a war. We haven't had like a big, large, oh, there's another war. And so it's like, it's overload, right? It's heart overload. And so it's, in the past, I think, collectively, it might have been a little bit easier for us to just go, I'm going to hit the snooze button for a while. But now it's like the alarm never goes off, right? It just keeps on going and going and going. And so how do we stand with that, work with that, meet that? We must be fortified in our spiritual practice so we can. In my 20s, I found Unity. And I actually went to Unity regularly then and got pretty engaged right away. And my life started changing in really intriguing ways that I didn't connect the dots to initially. So I would, you know, in my 20s, I spent a lot of time hanging out with my friends on the weekends, and it was in Chicago, so it was really fun. There were street fairs all summer long, and I loved that kind of stuff. So I remember just not that long after getting into Unity, I went to one of these street fairs, and I couldn't stay. The music was so loud, and the people were so crowded in, and things that I used to enjoy being in, I was overstimulated. And I was so disappointed, I had to leave. I couldn't hang out with my friends. It was just too much. And then I became a vegetarian, and I couldn't eat my animal friends, you know. And my sister said, you know, what's going on with you? Why are you changing all your habits? And I was like, I don't know. I think it was just all I could point to is this burgeoning new spiritual path that I was on. So what I think happens to us is that the world keeps desensitizing us and the spiritual practice resensitizes us. And it's easy to slip into numbing out or trying to push away because the sensitivity is opened back up and we feel it. We see it. We can't unsee. We can't unfeel, but we try to unfeel. And so the difficult task that is before us is to stay open, to keep walking, to allow ourselves to be in it, because we said yes to this. And we said a wholehearted yes to it. Yes, Source, I want to be incarnated again right now during this time so that I can really learn, really awaken, and help the rest of the planet awaken too. I want to raise up humanity. I want to knock loose whatever pieces that need to fall away so that the harmony and the truth and the peace and the love and the joy can rise up throughout the world. That's the call of higher love. And I believe it's the one we've all answered to. It's just sometimes we try to go back to sleep and we really can't anymore. At the very least, if we have to give up some worldly pleasures when we get on this walk of spirituality, or maybe ask to be given up more to say yes to the things we are guided to do, what we will walk into by doing so is a technicolor kind of palpable love. It will be worth, in other words, the risk of giving up whatever it is that we have to give up. Because that love is something we've not yet touched. The depth of that love that is awaiting us in the beloved community is something I believe beyond our imagination, beyond our belief. But like the man in the Bible said, I believe, help my unbelief. And so it's the work of unbelieving, of letting go of the unbeliefs, the impossibilities, the ideas that stop us, and to say, you know what? I think if I keep walking, I'm going to walk right into palpable technicolor love like I never thought was possible. But that walk and that entry point is a narrow gate. Jesus said, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. But we all need to find it. We're all asked to find it. We're all guided to find it. We're all called to find it. You know, throughout your lifetime, you've had those nudges, you've had those calls, you've had those feelings that I'm being asked to do something more, that Spirit wants something more of me, that there is more of me to give, that I want to be wholehearted in this world, and it gets hard and I shut down. And God is going, open up again. Try again. Get up again. See what you can do again. Be the love. Walk through the narrow gate. You don't know what's on the other side exactly, but I'm pretty sure, and I think all of us are, it's really good. It's really good. That's heaven's gate, right? Heaven on earth's gate. And that's what we're making together, heaven on earth. That's what we're pinning to the earth. That's what we're letting arise into the earth, through all of us. So if we are the ones then who love without exception, what does that mean really? Love without exception. What could that look like? Well, here's what happens. Something horrible happens in the world, and humanity looks really amazing. We really look at our best when something horrible happens in the world in terms of our response. Because immediately we start uniting. Immediately we have this outpouring of love. We have this desire to serve. You know, I think they said when Katrina happened years ago, people were so in the space of love that they were willing to be taxed higher just to help the people that they had never seen before, that didn't know existed, and they saw the poverty, and we collectively went, yeah, raise my taxes. And so it's like out of that kind of love comes those kinds of actions, because it's the way we're wired, right? So when something happens in the world, we're there, we're at our best. But here's the thing. all that outpouring of love, all that direction of service and kindness and goodness is only pointed one way, to the victims. And then we pivot and look at the perpetrator, and all the love goes out the door, right? Now we're in hatred. Now we're in fear. Now we're in pushing away. Now we're in saying, no, all people are divine, but, well, maybe not, right? Suddenly we're not, I mean, principle is principle. Spiritual principle is principle. It's like it doesn't change. Principle is principle. What has to change is our minds and our hearts to say, I'm doing the difficult task of love. I'm not just loving because it's easy. Jesus talked about that. I'm not just loving people because they love me back. I'm loving where it's hard. I'm loving where they're angry. I'm loving where they're in fear. I'm loving where they're hurting. That's where we get to the compassion, right? When we recognize hurting people hurt, and we start to feel compassion, and it starts to break down that pivot away from love, and we say, oh, everyone is in the circle. Everyone is deserving of love. Everyone is worthy of love. In fact, everyone has the divine within them, and it is my work to see it, to acknowledge it, to love them despite their terrible behavior. So, if we believe we're all divine, we might even consider the more heinous the crime, the more that person has lost sight of the truth of who they are, and the more they need us to love them. Because who else will? We used to say only a mother could love that person. Well, we all need to be mothers then. Because clearly our world is in need of a lot of mother love. And we can be it. We are being called to be it. We have been asked to be it. And I believe we all said yes to be it. We just might have forgotten our marching orders. They're here now. So Krista Tippett interviewed John Lewis, the late congressman who was alongside Martin Luther King through the civil rights movement. He had been beaten, spit upon, all kinds of horrendous things have happened to this man. And he never lost his love for his so-called enemy. He never saw them as enemies. Let's take, actually it's a listen. This is from NPR, it's an audio track. But we do have a still photo with it.
But you also understood this to be a spiritual confrontation, first within yourselves and then with the world outside. Is that right?
You're so right. First of all, you have to grow. It's just not something that is natural.
You
have to be taught the way of peace, the way of love, the way of nonviolence. And in the religious sense, in the moral sense, you can say in the bosom of every human being, there is a spark of the divine. So you don't have a right as a human to abuse that spark of the divine in your fellow human being. We, from time to time, we discuss, if you see someone that are attacking you, beating you, spitting on you, you have to think of that person. You know, years ago, that person was an innocent child, innocent little baby. Mm. And so what happened? Did something go wrong? Did the environment? Or did someone teach that person to hate, to abuse others? So you try to appeal to the goodness of every human being. Mm-hmm. And you don't give up. You never give up on anyone.
Never give up on anyone. Never give up on anyone. You can be in the midst of somebody who's yelling and screaming and having a tizzy fit, angry and everything else. But if we can really stand in that space, we don't give up on them. Doesn't mean we're standing there trying to transform them. We can just hold space, right? Hold the love, pray for them, send them a blessing, see the divine in them. Jesus said, here's what you need to do. Love your enemies. Do good to them who hate. And pray for them. Pretty clear. That's the high call of love. That's the sometimes difficult task of love. But it's what we need to do. And that is what John Lewis and Rosa Parks and all of those involved in the civil rights movement and so many other movements and people across time have done. They have been love in action to that level that seems, as he's even indicated, doesn't even maybe seem natural. But of course, it couldn't be more natural at a spiritual level. And so it may initially have sounded like too much to ask of humans when Jesus laid that out to his disciples, yet we've seen it over and over again embodied for us, examples for us. So we might, for ourselves, ask in any given point when we feel that kind of anger or fear or hatred arise in our own hearts, we might ask ourselves, what would John Lewis do? What would Rosa Parks do here? What would the Dalai Lama do, or Mother Teresa, or whoever your favorite exemplar of spirituality and nonviolence is, whoever your person is that you think really embodies this kind of divine love? And then it's important to follow that up with, what will I do? What would they do? And if I want to walk that path, what will I do now? How will I meet this now? How will I respond? How will I initiate more love in this world? So as beloved community members, as practitioners, we can stand on these principles, whether the conditions around us are rosy or bleak. Because like spirit, we can be in that kind of principle that says, things come and go, circumstances change, conditions come and go, situations come and go. But if we can be in that place, it's always love. Love is always the response. Love is always the answer. Love is always what we're called to be. Wholeheartedness. Will you become the epitome of wholeheartedness? If you do, wholehearted people are people that are that express courage and connection, that express compassion. These are the qualities. There's an acknowledgement in our vulnerabilities, right? There's an opening to compassion, empathy for ourselves and for others when we walk this wholehearted way, when we embody this way of being. And part of it is how we interact with each other and how we are willing then to hear each other and to change our minds and hearts. Gary Zukav wrote in Soul Stories a story about a man coming to deliver firewood to his home. And every year he would get a big stack of firewood. And this year, winter was coming and he really needed it. And the man came and he said, the firewood's going to cost you more this year. And Gary said he started to feel a little agitated. And so Gary says, you can stack it over here by the woodshed. And the man says, my nephew will do that. I'm going to go get some more. And Gary said, I just started to feel really angry. So I walked over to the young man who was stacking the wood very carefully. And I said, do you like your uncle? And he said, yeah. And he said, why? And he said, well, because he's working with me so that I can have money for school clothes. We don't have any money. And he said, all of a sudden, I melted. He said, suddenly, I liked being with him. Suddenly, I liked being with his uncle. And I kind of liked our arrangement, firewood for school clothes. It started to feel really good. And he goes, and then I realized something, that when we started our interaction, I saw people selling firewood. And when we finished, I saw an uncle and his nephew working to buy school clothes. Engaging, listening to each other, listening to the stories changes everything, doesn't it? It always changes our perspective, it seems, opens our heart to a new way of understanding. And that's what the walk of love requires. It's not super difficult, even though the path of love can be difficult. The ways in which we do it don't always have to be so challenging. But it all kind of adds up to a pathway. So that in those moments where we reach out and we get to know each other and we hear each other's stories and we open our hearts and it becomes a habit in which our hearts are open to humanity and we see the goodness in humanity, then when something happens that disrupts that, we're a little more prepared or pre-prayered, I like to say, to be in the love, to stay in the love. Listening to each other, engaging with one another, making heart-to-heart connection. Krista Tippett ends this chapter with, what is love? She says, answer that question with a story about the last time you saw it, and then go and be critical yeast. So let's answer with higher love. Let's enter through the narrow gate, be willing to go that route, and love and bless all people, including the people who are perpetuating or perpetrating things we would rather not see in this world, but are doing it out of a cry for love, a starvation for love that we can fulfill. Let's do this together. Let's know, for you and I both to know, that our wholehearted love is the critical yeast that is needed to co-create the beloved community we can see, we can taste a little bit of, we can imagine a little bit of, and it's going to be even better. Let's say it together. My wholehearted love is the critical yeast that co-creates the beloved community. And so it is.